Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 56, with Sarah Kornack and Bethann Schwamberger. Today we're talking with Laura Smith of iHeartPlanners.com. Laura, as you can tell from the name of her blog and her Etsy shop, loves planners and loves organizing. Laura really gives us some fantastic advice for staying on top of things and being focused. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the show, we are pleased to welcome Laura Smith of iHeartPlanners.com. Laura loves planners, organizing, and chocolate. She stays busy running her Etsy shop where she sells planner printables and posting on her blog where her focus is on home organizing, staying productive, and simplifying your life so you have time to do what matters most. Laura is a Pittsburgher, as are we, and new mom to baby girl Savannah. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, thank you.
Laura, could you tell us a little bit more about your family, your new baby daughter, and then tell us about your business and how you got started in business?
Yeah, so like you said, I have a two-month-old baby girl, Savannah, so I'm very new to being a business mom. That's a little bit of my family. Like you said, I live in Pittsburgh, so it's great to find other Pittsburghers. And how I got started in business, for probably several years, I actually got a degree in electrical engineering, and I've worked as an electrical engineer for about 6 years. And throughout that time, I was always reading blogs about how to start your own business online, and I always found like that fascinating, and I always had in the back of my mind that that was something I would love to try, but I really didn't have the confidence or the courage to try it. But I was reading about it, basically everything I could about how to make money online and how to succeed like that. And so I kind of like internalized all those things that I was reading. And I think it was 2012. I kind of like that year, I kind of decided it was time to stop letting just fear for no reason hold me back. And so I did a lot of things that were really outside my comfort zone, including kind of starting the business. And that next year, I quit my engineering job so I could focus on the business full time. And it's just really grown from there. So it started a couple years ago. Actually, I think 3 days ago was my official 2-year business anniversary. So
congratulations on your 2-year anniversary, Laura. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I love your story of just taking that jump from being an engineer, which I'm sure was, you know, I'm sure you had a great job. So that had to be very scary jumping from that into the online business world.
Yeah, it was very different from going from traditional 9-to-5 to being my own boss. And really what helped in my situation, what helped us be able to make the transition is we had kind of always planned that I would stay at home with our kids and not necessarily bring in an income. So we just kind of started that early to give me a chance to work on the business. So I didn't have the pressure that I had to bring in an income. We could live on my husband's income. So that kind of gave me a special opportunity to be able to focus on it before it was built up to a full-time income.
Can you tell us more about why planners? Like, what was that thing about planners that you knew you wanted to build your business around that?
Well, that's actually a bit of a journey in and of itself. I have always loved planners and planning and organizing and things like that. And I think I didn't really have the confidence that you could build a business around that. I'm not sure why, because a lot of people want to get organized, but I just didn't have that confidence. So when I actually started the blog, I wasn't entirely sure exactly the direction that I wanted to go. I had a lot of ideas. I thought about various things I could sell. I thought about doing blog design. I had an interest in that. And so I had a lot of different ideas. So I actually called my blog Super Sweet Life because I felt like that didn't pigeonhole me into one particular focus or area, so I could kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And it just quickly became clear that my passion more than anything was organizing, and that's what people resonated with. So it didn't take but probably 3 or 4 months of that to realize that I didn't want to pursue those other avenues, in part because if you try to pursue too many things, it's just really hard to become very good at any of them and really turn it into something profitable. So I quickly narrowed down my focus, and I actually rebranded earlier this year to iHeart Planners because I'm very clear now that my focus is organizing and planners. So
Laura, I noticed on your blog, and your Etsy shop as well, but your photos are really beautiful. The way you have, I know, like your new planner for 2015, you have it laid out on a desk. You have, you know, it's just this perfect composition. And so I was wondering if you have any tips for us on, you know, how to take great photos and how to set up a great photo composition.
Well, I first of all want to say that photos, I think, are absolutely key and very difficult. 90% of the photos you see on my blog are ones that I've taken, but for a few key items like that Sweet Life Planner, I hire that out because I feel like if photography is so important, and I know that it is, that's going to be some of the best bang for my buck if I can hire that out to someone who is fantastic at that. But as far as taking your own photos, when I do that, basically my strategy is to just take a lot. What I do is I go out there with my camera, I go outside. Natural light is key. I don't even mess with anything else. Even if it's like 2 degrees outside, I go on my back porch and I take the pictures out there. And I'm sure my neighbors probably think I'm crazy, but I take a whole bunch of different ones, and I come back to my computer and I look at them. And once I get a basic setup that works with like props in the background, I kind of know that that works, and then I can photograph different items in that same basic setup. So that kind of helps me be able to do that. But if you're not really, if photography isn't your focus, and for me, I feel like I can't spend several hours a week focusing on photography and building up my photography skills. So I kind of have to go with the trying out a bunch of different things and then finding something that works and repeating it. That's basically my strategy.
I think that makes perfect sense. Like you said, you find actually earlier this week, Sarah and I were messing with product photography for our shop, and it really is so tricky to find that right, the right composition, you know, just that layout that's pleasing to the eye. So I think that's a really smart idea of, you know, once you find that layout that looks really great, just kind of rinse and repeat.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, so much harder than it looks.
Yeah.
For me, it is.
Definitely. And so then in terms of finding a photographer who takes some of the product photos for you, do you have any tips on how to find a great photographer who knows how to take product photos or anything like that?
I actually don't have any fantastic tips. I really wish that I had a local photographer, but I haven't been able to find one. I think it's hard. I mean, I've done Google searches, and I think it's really hard to find people that are focused on small business product photography. So when you Google that, not a lot comes up. I actually found my person. She's international, which isn't necessarily ideal to have to mail stuff internationally to her, but I was in a Facebook group where I ran across her blog and saw that she did photography and contacted her about it. But I think it is hard to find good photographers, especially ones that are affordable for a newer business.
That's really interesting. So you can ship all of your planners to her, and then she lays it out and does the photography wherever she's located in the world, I guess?
Yeah, and like I said, I've only had her do my Sweet Life planners for 2014 and 2015, so that's about all I've had her do, and the rest I do myself, but for that one that's so important. So if I had to have her photograph everything, I think it would be a little bit too difficult to work with someone that you had to mail stuff to and have that time delay and that expense. But
is that gold photo that you have, one of the ones that slides across the screen at the top, is that one of hers? Or
no,
is that
actually
one?
That's another, I didn't even think of that, but that's actually another great piece of advice I can give, is that another thing that I do is use stock photos, and that's actually a stock photo. My favorite place to get stock photos is on Etsy, and I think it's called Kate Max Photography, and she has, I just think she does a great job, and each photo is $15, which I think is affordable, and just can make your, if you have a product that works well to kind of stick in there digitally, it can work really well. And I've been super excited to find her shop and use her photos when I can. And it just saves so much time, because for that $15, it would probably take me 2 hours to come up with something close to that nice looking.
That is a really great tip. And I know Sarah and I really love dollarphotoclub.com for the stock photos, but I think finding someone, you know, like you recommended on Etsy is great, because I bet her photos are a bit more focused and a bit more of the exact kind of genre you're looking for. Because I know, you know, on the bigger stock photography sites, you'll find a lot of really cheesy things mixed in with the good photos. So sometimes it's hard to sift through.
Well, I've also found on those stock photography sites, it takes you a long time to find what you need, because there's just so many that aren't your style at all. So with someone like that, like, she just has fewer things to look for, but they're closer to my style, so it's really easy to just browse. And she has maybe 3 or 4 different layouts with this kind of a similar thing, so you can make your things look really cohesive. And she also, it's designed for you to put your product on it, so it's easier to use than maybe other photos that aren't designed for that.
Okay, and so then walk us through that process, because I've attempted this in the past and I haven't been very great at it. How do you go about taking a great stock photo and then inserting your product into it?
I think the key is, instead of just like dragging your product into it, is to use shadows. So it makes it can look very realistic. And actually, the Etsy shop where I got the photos, she has a tutorial, a video tutorial, where she walks you through how to do it in Photoshop. That's what I use. I'm sure you could do it in Elements. I'm not sure if you can do it on like some of those other free online, like PicMonkey or Canva. I'm not sure. But adding the shadow to the product, I think, makes it look realistic.
So clearly you are a very skilled organizer, and I know lots of us have trouble staying organized as moms and business owners. Do you have any tips for staying organized and being more productive?
I mean, that's definitely tough for everyone, myself included, but one of the things that has helped me the most is really planning, first of all, because I don't think you can over plan, because honestly, whenever I sit down at the beginning of the week and make my plan, I rarely get through everything on my list, but I get through a whole lot more than I would if I didn't bother to plan at all, because I feel like so much of the time is wasted, and there's so many things, especially when you have an online business. There's 80,000 different things and 20 social media channels and all these things you could be working on. And if your mind is just kind of distracted while you're trying to work and jumping from one thing to the next, it wastes time. But if you have a clear, this is exactly what I need to do next, and you focus on it. And my number one tip for that is close out. Like, I don't even have notifications on my phone or my computer. I close out of email, because if I see that little inbox that like has a new email, I just cannot resist looking at seeing what the email is. Half the time it's junk mail or something, but I think just staying really, really focused. The other thing is, one of the things that really changed the way that I work was Kat Lee's advice. I think you've had her on recently, about the whole worker bee, CEO, manager hat. So when you're actually working, you've already planned everything and you're not distracted by wondering if this is the right strategy. You just sit down and do it. So that's my biggest advice.
I think that's great advice.
So, Laura, what are some of the best ways that you've grown your business?
I would say probably the single best thing that I have done, honestly, has just been to be very persistent. Because what I have found is, and especially when I first started, I had 5 page views a day, you know, and probably 1 from my husband, 1 from my mom, and 1 from my best friend. So, like, you know, 2 strangers were visiting my blog, and it's hard, I think, to really keep going and put products out there and keep going with the strategies that I thought would work when in the beginning especially, the momentum is very, very slow. And I felt like I'm not sure if what I'm doing is really paying off, because it just, most of the things, especially online, take a while to take effect. And so I found that my page views or my sales or just my business in general, it'll plateau for a few months, and then all of a sudden it'll just take off and then, you know, reach another plateau and then take off again. And those things, it's not a direct result of one thing or one strategy. It's just being really consistent with the few things that I do. And I don't try to be on a bunch of social media channels or do a whole lot of different things. I just focus on a few things and I just keep doing them. And I think that that's helped me more than anything.
Okay, so then let's narrow down. I think that advice is great, by the way. What are the few things that you really try to focus on?
I would say the first thing that I try to focus on is when someone comes to my site, I want them to stay there. I don't want them just to come and jump off. So with my actual site, my whole goal is to get people to sign up for my mailing list. And then the number one thing that I focus on of everything else is my email newsletter. I send it out once a week, and I have, since I started, I haven't missed a week. That is like the number one thing. I will have a newsletter because it's really important to stay in communication with the people that sign up. And so I would say specifically, definitely a newsletter and getting people on. As far as social media, Pinterest, I focus on that. I've recently started with Instagram, but other than that, I just kind of Facebook. I have a Facebook page, but I don't, it's so hard not to, but I don't spend any time on it. I kind of auto-post a few things from Instagram to there, and that's it, because it's so much better for me to bring in traffic from Pinterest and spend all my time there than it would be if I spent half my time on Pinterest and half my time on Facebook. So I would say those are probably the two places that I have worked the hardest and that have really worked for me.
You mentioned your email list being so important to you. And we noticed that you have a How to Simplify Your Life Once and For All e-course for new email subscribers. How has that helped you to bring in subscribers? And how does that e-course work? What format does it take on?
How it works is I set up an autoresponder sequence or a drip campaign in Mad Mimi that I use for my newsletters. So there's 6 lessons. So the first, when they immediately sign up and confirm, it emails them an introduction letter saying their first lesson is going to come the next day, and then it automatically sends the first lesson the next day, the next lesson a week later, the next one a week later, and so on. So, and it's pretty much just one main graphic and all a pretty short text, because I know people don't have a lot of time and they don't need something super long and elaborate. They just need some simple steps they can take to really make a difference. And when I created that, what I was thinking about was trying my best to really help them change their life. And the best way to do that is to start really small and just to actually make the change. And I know for me, my problem is I want to overhaul my life tomorrow. And I think that's a lot of people's problem. So I really focus on giving them little tasks that can really be done. The other thing I do in that, especially when they first sign up, is I ask them to respond to the email, tell me what they need help with. And each lesson, I ask them to respond and tell me how they did. And I ask them to tell me what their plans are to implement the lesson, and either myself or my assistant actually responds to every single email. So I just feel it's really important for them to know that a real person is listening and cares.
That sounds like a great strategy. And obviously I know the part about really listening and caring, that's not a strategy, but you know, that is because you do care.
Right.
I just mean but having the e-course go out and, you know, keeping that goal of just being really helpful to your subscribers in mind, I think that's excellent. And then I'm curious, because I know we've had a lot of our listeners talk about the question of what to put in their newsletter. They wonder, as a product-based business, what do I share with my customers and my subscribers every week? So I'm curious about what goes out in that weekly newsletter for you.
So basically, I keep it pretty simple, and on my blog, for the most part, with the exception of this month, I post once a week, one main post a week, so that's just what I focus all my energy on. And then that post is scheduled for Thursday morning, and the newsletter goes out Friday morning. So the main content of the newsletter is whatever's in that post. So I just kind of – I write my own little blurb about the post, and then I say, click here to read all about – you know, how I organize this small space or whatever the post is. And then below that, if there's a second post, I'll kind of feature that. And then I'll just usually put a couple small picture links to a product in my shop at the very bottom of the list. And I will say, I don't think, you know, those products I put in the bottom, they don't get a lot of clicks or probably a ton of sales, but the point is just to, you know, be in contact with them often, and when I really see the results is when I launch something like the Sweet Life Planner I just launched a month ago. I send out a special email all about that to really get their attention.
It sounds like maybe those pictures just keep reminding them each week about all these great planners that you have, and then, bam, when the new one comes out, they're like primed. They're ready to jump on boards.
I think it's important not to get too caught up in the statistics and being like, exactly this many people clicked through to this, and you know, it doesn't seem like anyone's like. If you focus too much on that, it'll feel like it's not working when it really is. And so I just think it's important, especially because I like looking at the statistics and analyzing them, but I think it's really easy to go overboard in that. And so just focus on, you know, just to focus on connecting with people and helping them. And the rest really does come naturally if that's the main thing that you're thinking about when you put out your newsletter.
True. We've noticed that you've got a couple of different revenue streams going on. You have your blog and some ads on there. You sell your planner on your blog, but you also have the Etsy shop as well, which has done very well in the 2 years that has been open. Can you maybe break down your revenue streams by percentage? Like, where's the bulk of your revenue coming from?
Okay, the first thing about that is when I look at both revenue and profit, I kind of look at it on a yearly basis because – you know, that's the way I think blogs in general and shops and things, it's kind of obviously, like, for example, organizing January is a huge month, but, you know, February is not nearly so big. And that's kind of the way it is. Or when I release a new product like the Sweet Life Planner, that brings in a ton of sales. So I kind of look at it as an overall yearly basis because it's so inconsistent from month to month. And when I look at it from that perspective, by far my smallest source of income is the ads on my blog. I purposefully don't put too many on there or make them too prominent because the whole plan is to keep that a smaller part of the income and my own products to be a much larger part. The second source of income is definitely the Sweet Life Planner that I sell directly on my blog. And occasionally I do a few affiliate sales on my blog, but not many. And then the least amount of my income actually comes from the Etsy shop. In part because I sell a lot of physical products on there, and that has a lot of, while the revenue might be a little higher, the profit is not as high because obviously you have to buy supplies and materials and things. So, you know, the profit margin is not nearly as high on a physical product.
That is really interesting to hear. I think maybe that's the push that some Etsy sellers need to get their own blog going because, you know, if your Etsy shop is doing well, but your blog is doing that much better.
I mean, I think it's easy to quickly go too far in diversifying, and I've definitely had some shortly after I start, I still have the vision of bringing all my products out of my Etsy shop also to my own shop, but I tried to do that too early, and it just did not work well. So it can be difficult to really diversify yourself too much, but at the same time, if all your eggs are in one basket, that's kind of scary, and you don't have as much flexibility. So, and you just never know when something, one thing is going to do better. And so, and it really complements each other. The blog and the Etsy shop, they really do complement each other well. And I enjoy being able to do more than just one thing. Like, not only, I enjoy writing blog posts, but I also really enjoy the creative part of actually making the physical products and coming up with new ideas. That's something I really enjoy as well. That said, I have been really focusing on bringing a larger percentage of my profit intentionally from digital products, because with a baby and a family, it's difficult to consistently find time to create the physical products, because every time someone buys them right away, you're pigeonholed into having to create that product right away. And there's a lot of behind the scenes of, you know, keeping things in stock. So I've purposely tried to keep the physical products a smaller part of the income.
That makes sense. And that was something I was curious too. You do have a different sort of a story than some of the moms we've talked to so far, in that you had your business set up and running, and then you added the baby on top of it. So I was curious to know, how has your business had to adjust with the addition of the baby on top of things?
Well, that's a great question. Obviously, my life has changed a lot. So I will say the first thing I did, as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I tried even harder. And this had always kind of been part of the vision, to increase the sales of digital products. And I know I need to rely less and less on something that I have to turn around right away, because you know, things that run on autopilot more. So that's the first thing I did. The second thing I did was I prepared as much as I possibly could before the baby came. I really worked on getting a lot of things done ahead of time. Third, I have brought on more help. I'm okay with decreasing my profits right now so that I can not go too crazy trying to do it all. So I brought on more help with the business, virtual assistant, and things like that. You know, that said, I still work a lot on it now, and it really is interesting to go from being just myself and having, you know, 40 solid hours a week to work on it, and now the picture just, it looks totally different. Like, I work most of the time. My daughter is, like, sitting right beside me. She's only 11 weeks old, and she doesn't really take naps yet, so I don't really have a nap time to work in, so I kind of work with her. I can, you know, I've learned creative things, like I can bounce her seat with my foot while I'm, like, typing on the computer, things like that, and I just have to, like, I don't have much of a work day anymore. I don't, like, start working at 8 and stop working at 4. I mean, it's kind of, like, all blended into one, so I'll work for 30 minutes, and then when she needs me, I'll just spend time with her for a few minutes, and then I'll go back to working. And so it's not as, like, clean and precise as it was before, or as my planning nature might prefer it to be, but I just think it's a huge, huge blessing that I get to work, you know, with my daughter just sitting right beside me. And I think all along there's changes that happen, and I know, you know, what it looks like now is going to be totally different even 2 months from now, because, you know, babies change so fast, or 2 years from now, the picture might be completely different. So I just try to be ready to be as flexible as possible, knowing that her needs are going to be constantly changing.
Is that kind of extremely difficult, having to be so flexible for a person that is generally very much a planner and organized? When you can't count on a certain amount of time, has that been a bit of a struggle?
Yes, that has definitely been a struggle, and I totally expected that struggle, but it is, for a person that likes to be organized and planned, and that has been a struggle, and it's just something that, you know, there's not really a way around it. I just have to kind of try to embrace the fact that, you know, life with a newborn is unpredictable, and no longer can I, you know, have the focus time that I used to have, and kind of even try to see the blessing in that. You know, she's such a blessing, and I'm so glad to have her, and see the blessing in having a job that I can work at home with her and trying to turn it into something positive. But it is a struggle. I mean, it is hard for me, and I mean, I think it would be just to not be able to get nearly as much done and not be able to predict things nearly as well. And I have, one of the things I have done, this is something that I think everyone should always do, but it's even more important when you are in a less predictable situation, is prioritize like crazy. Like, these are the things that absolutely have to get done, and that's what I'm going to work on first, and that's what I'm going to focus on the most. And a lot of the other things aren't going to get done as fast, or just aren't going to get done. But the worst thing to do is, and I know it's tempting, at least for me, is to work on something that's less important just because it's there and it seems fun, rather than working on the things that are most important to get done.
I love that advice. That's really smart. And it was cracking me up that you said you planned for things to be less organized like that. That was just too funny. Like, of course, you planned for the chaos. So that's awesome.
No, but I really, truly did. Like, you know, I did.
That's true. I missed that irony, Bethany.
She even plans for the unpredictable things. That's great. That's a true planner. I love it.
I could stand to plan for some chaos.
Yeah, true. Laura, do you have a favorite tool for your business that helps you to grow or to stay organized?
So, obviously, my physical planner, because I love writing things out and like crossing them off. But other than that, my favorite online tool, and this is particularly helpful because I have multiple Etsy shops and lots of different places that I'm getting income and lots of expenses. I use Outright.com for my accounting, and I love how it just automatically links up to Etsy and my business credit card and all those things. So it makes the accounting side of things really quick and easy. So I've really been loving Outright.
That sounds fantastic, because we are manually entering in all of our Etsy transactions.
Oh, wow.
Our mom assistant helps us.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, that would take a long time.
Somebody in our Facebook group has recommended Outright as well. So I definitely want to look at it.
It has limitations. I mean, I'm getting close to outgrowing it, unfortunately. But for what?
Oh, how do you outgrow it?
Well, the integrations are a little bit limited. Like, for example, it only links to Etsy. But when I open my own thing on Shopify, for example, it's not going to link to that. I've started, since I have multiple Etsy shops now, you can't have the two Etsy shops on one email address. So it's harder to, you know, logging in and out, so I'm using ShipStation to manage those orders, and it doesn't link up with ShipStation, so at the end of the month I have to go in and input the shipping. So, yeah, I mean, but it's so straightforward and easy to use, and I might still try to, you know, it's worth it to me to have to manually enter a couple of things because of how easy it is to use, and it's free.
Wow, free. I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. I think somebody else, too, I'm sorry to go down another rabbit hole here, but somebody else mentioned ShipStation, I believe, before. But what's the advantage to using something like ShipStation compared to just printing the label right out of the Etsy?
Well, I think that the Etsy printing is, like, fantastic. I mean, really, it is so amazing. It's, I mean, you really get a lot for your, you know, 3.5% that you give Etsy. But the reason I started using it, and I've just started like within the past month, but the main reason I did it, and I'm trying to get everything as streamlined as possible for January because it's going to be a big month and, you know, first time with a baby. But I have multiple Etsy shops. And so it's really hard to manage more than one Etsy shop. So I see everything all in one place when I use ShipStation. And then it has some other things, like you can customize the emails that go out with each order. For example, I've done this some in Etsy, but it's easier in ShipStation. Like, whenever I send a shipping notice, if they bought labels, I want to include a link to the tutorial, because I've filmed videos on how to apply the labels. But if they ordered a decal, that's a different video. So it's set up, depending on the product, it'll automatically send out that email. You can save the weights of things, so you don't have to enter the weight. You know what it is if you have standard products of the same weight. So there is a lot of advantages, but if you don't have a high volume, I don't know that it would necessarily be worth the money. Or if you had things that were just exactly the same, it probably wouldn't be a great advantage.
What you mentioned, though, sounds really neat. It sounds really good for especially your situation, being able to send those different emails with the links and the videos and having the weight put in. And you're right, because at one point in time, we had multiple Etsy accounts, too, and it's a big pain to log in and out every single time.
I wish they would make that better. They always talk about it, but they never do. And I held off for the longest time getting it. Multiple shops, but it just became absolutely necessary. So
I don't think I realized you did have the two shops. So I knew the iHeart Planner shop.
That's
but
the main one, and that's been around the longest. It's probably only been within the last 3 months I opened up iHeart Planner dividers and iHeart Planner sleeves. And I mean, I started offering them in my main shop. It was really tough to decide how to work things, but basically, I would like to get to the point where the main shop is all printables, because you're very limited with like coupon codes and discounts when you have printables and physical products in the same shop. I can't like just do a half price coupon code because I can't afford to discount certain things at half price, and it becomes really, really cluttered. So my divider shop, it has only the pretty planner dividers, and they're all pre-made now. So it looks just way more cohesive to have all you see in that shop. And I can organize it better, because when you have all these different things in your shop, it's just, and you only have 10 sections and no subsections, it's impossible to organize it in a way that makes sense. And I was finding, you know, whatever someone's bought more recently or whatever renewed the most recently comes to the top of the shop, and that's what I'm selling the most of, because people see it and they don't really see the other stuff. So I don't know. That's why I finally decided that was probably the only way to do it. But it's hard, because it takes a long time to build up the second shop. If I put the same product in my own shop, it would sell faster. But anyway, that's kind of why I went with all that.
That's really interesting to hear. Laura, do you have any business advice that you would say is the best advice given to you?
So besides what I already mentioned with Kat Lee's advice of the Worker Bee CEO manager hat, the other advice that I was given was by Mai Carl's in the Life is Messy boot camp, and I and many other people in that group and course were struggling with getting things done. It just seems so hard to really get things done, and I don't know why this is so, I hadn't thought of it in this way, but she suggested going on a media fast so you can just focus on something else, and that really I did that. As soon as I heard that, I was like, you're right. I need to stop reading all these blogs. I mean, I cleared out my blog reader tremendously, because I think you always need to be learning and reading and discovering new things, but that can paralyze you from making any progress, because one person's going to say you should post 5 times a week, and the next person's going to say you should post once a week, and the next person's going to be like, my blog took off when I posted once a month, and you know, you can just pull your hair out and like keep changing strategies. So to just, like, take a break from learning new things until you've implemented at least some of what you've learned, and maybe even just taking a break from social media in general so you can focus on taking action in your business, that's helped me a lot.
So we're going to take that part out of the podcast, since we're a business advice. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
She's saying take a fast.
But not from Brilliant Business Mom.
That's right.
Always listen to that.
That's funny.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think too, it is, I agree with you though, Laura, because there's so much noise. It's, you know, at some point you do have to turn off the noise and just focus on getting done what needs to get done. And I know for me, in the beginning, I was like all about Facebook for growing our business. And, you know, it has helped us a lot. Now we have a private Facebook group and it's awesome. But I've made myself, for the most part, only get on Facebook once a day. In the evening, I let myself be on there, check and see what's going on in our group, maybe schedule out the posts that we're going to schedule out for the next few days. But then other than that, I stay away because you're right. You just, you'll spend all your time just chatting and connecting or discovering new great articles, and you won't actually accomplish anything.
And I really think part of the reason why sometimes I'm searching for new strategies or articles or wanting to take new training is because I'm kind of not sure where to go next, or there's something I'm kind of putting off, and so it's easier just to read about a new strategy rather than like do the hard work of actually putting it into place. So it can be kind of like a procrastination technique, really.
Definitely. And another thing I will say, though, podcasts are awesome for all the creative businesses out there who, like, if they're doing something that maybe like photo editing or things like that, it's like it's so easy to listen to a podcast while you know, accomplish other work versus reading a blog post. You can't really do that while you're also editing photos. All that other.
I definitely listen to podcasts like this whenever I'm like making my products and, you know, filling orders that are kind of monotonous. Like I have to weed out all the little centers of my teeny tiny spice jar labels, and so that's just like a real monotonous thing. So it's great to like listen to a podcast. You're not having to take your time and like focus entirely on it.
You have just redeemed yourself, Laura.
There you go. There's not a lot of podcasts out there like this, I don't think.
Well, as we wrap up, we have learned a lot of great things from you, Laura. But could you share, now, you only have 11 weeks to work with here, but do you have any adorable, or probably not funny, but any adorable mommy moments that you've had in these precious 11 weeks with your dog?
So, yeah, there's not really a funny moment I can think of yet. I would say just like my favorite moment so far in the last 11 weeks has just been seeing my daughter smile. Like, I just loved it when she smiled for the first time. I couldn't wait because they just, as newborns, they can't really communicate a lot, and you don't know, you know, what they're thinking. And so just to see her smile and, like, know that she's happy, that's definitely my favorite moment.
That is certainly a wonderful moment.
You sounded so serious when you said that.
I know, that was like, stupid.
Baby smiles, they're wonderful.
Like, you do a comment stuff.
I don't know. Well, I don't know what to say. I just have baby smiles because Holden was, I adopted, so Holden was 2.5 when he came.
Oh, he's a baby.
So, yeah, I miss the baby smiles. Although we actually do have a video from when he was 4 months old, which Aww. Is really sweet. And, yeah, he was laying on the ground kind of looking at this toy and mesmerized. So that's really precious for us to have. So, but, yeah, so that's wonderful. Those little signs that she is communicating with you in her little way, and she's developing her little personality. So that's great. Laura, thank you so much for sharing all of your incredible advice with us. What are the best ways that our listeners can find you on your website and on social media?
So my website is www.iheartplanners.com, and you can find me on Pinterest and Instagram at iHeartPlanners, and on Etsy, also iHeartPlanners.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Right, thank you.
You can find the show notes for this episode at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/56. And while you're on the website, we would really appreciate it if you would take a moment and complete our listener survey at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/survey. You will find a very quick, easy survey that will help us know what you need most. We really want to be of service to you, and we thought the best way to know what you need and what you want was to just ask you about it. The survey is super quick, and it will help us to deliver a better podcast to you, to deliver better information, information that fits your needs. So thank you so much for taking the time to complete that survey. And now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.